Hey guys, my name is Mavi and I've spent the last 14 years in the plastic surgery and beauty industry, working alongside top board certified plastic surgeons.
Now I'm an independent patient coordinator who doesn't work for any surgeon. This means I have unbiased reviews for hundreds of doctors and I can help you achieve the look of your dreams, whether that's a supernatural or a video vixen. I use my professional and personal plastic surgery experience to help you look and feel your best.
Join in on the fun as I talk to plastic surgery experts, friends, and real-life patients about all things plastic surgery. Should be fun!
Hey guys, do I have the episode for you today? I am super excited to have Dr. Regina Rodman from Full Face Transformation at Face Forward Houston on the show today, and we're going to talk all about facial plastic surgery. Hello, Dr. Rodman.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good.
It's a little rainy here. We didn't really get to see the solar eclipse like we wanted to, but otherwise everything is good.
Good. Did you have any surgeries today?
No, I usually take Monday as an administrative day to just catch up on things and do some marketing, make videos, stuff like that.
Beautiful. So I'm super excited. Actually, right before we jumped on, I was getting through your questionnaire and I noticed that you do a lot of full face transformations. And I wrote some notes here, so you'll see me looking down. But some of these procedures I have not talked about at all on the show. So I really want you to go into it and give my audience, my listeners, really an inside look at what a typical day in the office is for you with some of these procedures. For example, hairline advancement, orbital rim reduction at the same time as a brow lift. So you have some really exciting things and I'd love to hear everything you have about full face transformation.
Yeah. The background, which is relevant, is sort of training. Facial plastic surgery is people who do ENT training and then do specialization in facial plastics. So we only do the face. But even within that, I am unique in that I did really the only facial plastics fellowship that focuses on craniofacial surgery. So like the bony skeleton of the face. So in my training, I did head shape abnormalities, like babies that are born with misshapen heads. I did cleft lips and palates. I did a lot of jaw work, chin work, like on the bones of the jaw and the chin. Sometimes for birth defects, sometimes for cancer, sometimes for trauma, like rebuilding them with other parts of the body, like bones from the leg. So I did that training and basically got out into practice and I was like, what am I going to do with all these skills? A lot of times those jobs are better suited for academic hospitals. Just the year I graduated, there just was no academic jobs. It's just how it was, and I had to have a job. So I went out into private practice and try to think of like where these skills translate. And so one of the things was V-line surgery, which has been made really popular in South Korea, which is basically cutting off the angle of the jaw and then narrowing the jaw so it tapers to more of a V. I also had learned something before, but learned a lot more about facial feminization surgery, which is usually done for transgender women. So that is a person who is born biologically male, but identifies as a woman, wants to become a woman, live in the world as a woman. In that surgery, I also do a brow bossing reduction. So this bone right here, making that smaller, making this part of the eye, the orbital rim that sticks out, reducing that. At the same time, can do a hairline advancement, a brow lift, a rhinoplasty, a lip lift, like the V-line surgery that was made popular, like is really popular in South Korea. It's also popular with transgender women who feel that their jaw is just too boxy, too masculine, Adam's apple reduction, and plus some other soft tissue procedures, depending on the patient, of course. And so I really launched into facial feminization surgery, mostly on transgender patients. But this is now my eighth or ninth year in practice. Like over the years, it's kind of changed. And so now, probably 50% of my population or my patient population is transgender men or women. And the other 50% is cisgender. So that's somebody who's born a woman and identifies as a woman, or born a man and identifies as a man. The other 50% is them doing the same procedures. And so it's cool because I think some of the trans community who's been plugged in online for years and years, like they've known about these procedures. But now I think so many people are on social media and that a lot of people are learning about these things on social media or Google or whatever. Now this information is like out there for the public. And so I see a lot of women who, one, just want their hairline lowered. I mean, I've had people that, you know, are my whole life, like I've hated this and everyone told me there's nothing that can be done. Well, there is. And then I also see like quite a few men and women both who just feel like their brow bone is too heavy, it makes them look masculine, or that the bone here under their eye is too heavy, that it sticks out too much, or sometimes it pushes down into their eye, which can kind of give that like droopy eyelid. So I now have sort of a new set of patients who maybe have had a brow lift, had a bleph, still feel like their eye is heavy, and were previously told that there's nothing you can do about it. But there is. There's something I can do about it, which is often reduce this bone. And then the eye really opens up. And then you really see the brow lift. Sometimes I need a little bit more lift to the brow as well. So it's kind of been cool how my practice has evolved to now, you know, I've always wanted to treat different kinds of people, different ages. And now that's like what I have.
Wow, I had no idea you were doing that much facial feminization. And I'm really curious about something.
Yeah.
Something that I love about helping women through their journey is the transformation that I get to watch them go through. So I'm super curious about the transformation and that patient population and how you get to experience that with them.
Transgender women are as diverse as cisgender women. You know, I have everything from 18, 19, 20 year olds to over 70. I mean, there's patients that just, if they're 70, they did not grow up in a world where that was okay. And maybe now they're retired. I had several people, they're retired and or their spouse has passed. And now they feel like without sort of these outside external factors that they can be who they truly are. So it's a huge range of people. Some of them have had other body surgeries. Some of them start with their face. A lot of people start with their face because that's the thing that we're putting forth into the world. And that's, you know, what gets them identified or not. So it's interesting and great, you know, when it turns out and patients are happy. And I mean, but it's also just not that different from cisgender people. Like, I mean, I've had patients where I've done a full, you know, brow, nose, lip lifts, maybe something with their chin in a cisgender woman, and they go on to get a new job because they just feel better. Like they're more confident, you know, like the goal with everybody is for them to just, you know, go out to have their outside match their inside and to be able to like go forth into the world and live that way, live knowing that their face looks the way they feel. Yeah, so for transgender women, it's obviously a much bigger change because they're also, you know, often coming to terms with work and family and significant others and relatives. And there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of, you know, additional stresses and I think like emotional factors that we try to talk through and work through. And I don't know, and sometimes it's great, like, sometimes they go off and live and their partner's accepting and everyone's accepting and it's a happy ending. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes, you know, I'm seeing people for follow-up and they're in the middle of a divorce or they're fighting for custody of their kids or, you know, other things where maybe their what they thought was their support system was just not as accepting. So yeah, as a facial plastic surgeon, I'm a little bit therapist, a little bit counselor, a lot surgeon, a little bit friend. Which is the same. I mean, the same thing I do with all the patients, but I think they kind of, some of my transgender patients, male and female, you know, there's a lot of other things that are happening in their lives.
Absolutely. So I would love to also talk about what you're seeing as far as hormonal changes. When do they start? where do you first see them in your face, and how can you combat them? Well, you can't really combat them, but
I will say, so I do both facial feminization and facial masculinization. I see far less transgender masculinization patients. I do see a lot of men, though. Like, I see a lot of cisgender men because I love doing chins and jaws and trying to make them stronger, more square, more angular. And I even see some women who just want sharper jaw, you know, like more definition of their jawline. That's really in vogue right now, the snatched jawline. It's my aesthetic. I like that for a lot of people. But I will say I see a lot more transgender women than men, because in men, so that's people who are born female going to live as males, the hormones do a great job on their face. So the hormones will help them grow facial hair. Often the extra testosterone and some of the other hormones make them get a little bit of acne, which makes the skin look kind of thick and ruddy, just a little bit, which we generally associate with as a male or masculine characteristic. The facial hair, I think, is the big thing. And so a lot of times, transgender men don't need surgery or don't opt for surgery of the face. When they do, it's often jaw and chin. Sometimes I can do an augmentation, like make the nose a little bigger, less dainty. I also do a brow bone augmentation where I design a custom implant that fits in this area to give them a brow bone. So the opposite is basically everything in facial feminization, but the opposite. But I see less of those patients. I love those patients. They're fun cases, but I see less of them just because the hormones work differently in them. Facial feminization is busy because hormones in people who were born male or went through puberty as male, the bony changes to their face don't change. So hormones, when they take like estrogen, progesterone or whatever combination, it can increase a little bit of subcutaneous fat. It thins the skin a little bit. It can help some hair grow back if they've had some male pattern or testosterone associated like baldness, not enough usually. And so the brow bone, which develops during puberty and or earlier in life, the bone doesn't shrink. So the wide jaw doesn't shrink. The nose, if patients are on hormones, I like them to wait a year, but I don't require it. And that's just because the skin thins a little bit. It doesn't make the bump go down, or if they have a wide tip, it doesn't help that. But it does thin the skin a little bit. And so any changes that I make in the rhinoplasty, you can see a little better. And I think I could just make it a little more dainty, a little bit cuter. It does develop some subcutaneous fat. And so I found patients will gain some weight in the face, but even that, it's usually not enough, and it's not quite in the right places. So they may kind of gain a little bit of subcutaneous fat all over the face, but it's not generally in the traditionally feminine or places that have been shown in studies where women have more volume, which is like the apple of the cheek or this part right here under the eyes. Women tend to have more volume there. Men tend to be flat. So generally, all the steps of a facial feminization surgery are needed, hormones or not. I think hormones maybe make it a little better, but not enough to not need surgery.
What about for cis women who are just going along, maybe perimenopausal, menopausal, and past menopause?
Drier skin tends to be less oily, a little bit more dry. I find, though, the older skin is, as it gets a little, it does start to thin out and I become a little bit more fine, sometimes a little bit more creepy. The good side of that is a lot of times scars in those patients heal really nicely. I have some lip lifts that I can't even find the scar. Like, it facelifts and it heals really well. But the changes in the skin itself and the changes in the loss of fat, you know, there's things we can do to prevent it. I mean, there's all kinds of quality skincare, number one, all your life. Sunscreen, quality skincare, like an antioxidant, like a vitamin C, a retinol, retin A, hydroquinone, depending on your skin type. Sunscreen. That would be like my first 10 things on the list. And then there's some treatments. I mean, some of that, there's microneedling and radiofrequency microneedling, and there's chemical peels. But keep in mind, we're like chasing we're trying to claw back some of what nature has taken at that point. Like prevention is 1,000 times better. So sort of like quality of skin, fillers can restore volume. Fat grafting, I think, is really the new, well, it's not new, but I think fat grafting, and especially now we're fat grafting with nanofat just for the regenerative properties and the stem cells. I think that is really where a lot of anti-aging and skincare is going to go.
I totally agree. I see fat grafting to the face is the most in vogue ever. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody wants it.
Yeah. And I think what's happened is for a while, it's like there was face wash and facelifts and like nothing in between. And then now all these energy devices and injectables, neuromodulators, fillers have created this huge kind of middle population for 20, 30, 40, 50 year olds that are like in between, like, I need more than acne medicine, but I don't need a facelift. I think there's this whole, you know, group of people that's paying attention. And for a while, we all bought neuromodulators, filler, and that now I think, and then energy devices have really become popular, and I have the Renuvion, I love it, like I think there's a place for it, but I think the pendulum is swinging back now where more and more people are like, I want something lasting, I want, and I understand it, surgery is a commitment, but I'll take a week or two of downtime if it's going to last me 10 years instead of going back every 6 to 9 months to get needles. And fat grafting is one of those things where we know not all of it stays, but what does stay will last forever. And now there's so many like cool devices that can micronize fat. So like now what I do is I inject what we call like milli fat to give volume and structure. So like for an FFS patient or just an older patient that's really lost a lot of volume, inject that deep to create volume. Then I micronize it in the micro fat, and I've been loving that. I don't inject in the eyelids, but a little bit right along the transition from the cheek to the eyelid. I never used to inject that because I was like, fat can be lumpy, it's unpredictable, I don't want that in the near the thin eyelid skin. But micronized fat is like, it adds just a little volume, it's smooth, it's nice. I've been injecting the lips with micronized fat. Same. I never used to, or I did it when I very started practice. And then I was like, man, they'd have weird lumps and it took forever to settle. And sometimes one lump wouldn't settle. Now the micronized, it's uniform, it's smooth, it's not tons of volume. What is there stays. Nano fat, I think, is going to be like the big thing in the next few years. Like it doesn't add any volume. Like what I'm doing now is I'm injecting it into the skin, literally, like almost like a filler, just for regeneration and just for stem cells. And I mean, compared to filler, is like it's a more time, more downtime, it's more cost, it's more everything. But I just think this, like the difference in those two things is the more people get educated, I don't. It's gonna be a no contest.
I 100% agree. I love the liquid gold. I think it's better for us to use the fat grafting than, for example, I know for a long time, kind of Sculptra was the in vogue. Everybody was using Sculptra. But I've heard from multiple facial plastic surgeons that it makes the face, when you do go in for a facelift, a little bit harder. Just like threads that they'll open up for a surgery and they find threads in there and they find more scar tissue from previous Sculptra use. Patients are listening. Women are listening and they're like, okay, so maybe I don't want to do fillers for the next 10 years. Maybe I should start looking for a more permanent alternative. And fat grafting is probably at the top of what I get questions about in my DM.
Yeah, fat grafting. And then also I'm seeing a lot more patients just kind of swinging back to like a mini lift, but that want like a platysmoplasty, a mini lift. They want a surgical solution instead of an energy device. I mean, like I said, I offer the Renuvion. I love it. It's great for the right patient. But for me myself, that's 100% what I'm going to do when I'm ready. Like, well, I'm getting ready, but not yet. but yeah, I will have surgery every step of the way because in the end, I just think that's better.
I agree. I'm waiting till I'm ready. Last year I was like, I lost a lot of weight in my face, and I started to think, do I need to go ahead and go get, I just turned 35. So I'm like, is it time for me? But now I've gained a little bit of weight back, and I feel like my face is filling back up. So I can probably wait a little bit longer.
Yep. That's the problem with weight loss. It's like whack-a-mole. Like, it's good for your, well, depending on where you're starting from, it's good for your heart and lungs and health and body and, you know, longevity. But yeah, your face does deflate, and it can make some people look older. You fix one thing and then try to have to fix another.
You get into another.
Yeah.
I really want, okay, I know you said we don't have to go down that rabbit hole, but I want to go down that rabbit hole of like, okay, for a patient who's considering a facelift, sometimes they'll hear things like mini facelift or mid facelift or whole facelift or brow lift and mid face and neck lift and all of these different things. Can you explain a little bit of the differences?
I will tell you, a lot of it is just marketing.
Thank you.
Finally, fill in the blank. I'm not going to call anybody out, but a lot of it's just marketing. And so the named lips, not saying they don't do a good job, but just a lot of it's marketing. At our meetings, there's a lot of discussion about deep plane facelift. Nobody even knows what a deep plane facelift is anymore because people are using the term #deep plane facelift. People are using the term in everything. So I would say for the consumer, it's more important to like understand what you're getting and not what it's called. There are SNAS lifts, which what was a facelift for a long time until actually like pretty recently, like the last 5 or 10 years. And now some people are calling those mini lifts. There's a short scar facelift, which can be a full deep plane facelift with just a smaller scar. It's like more of a keyhole approach, but some people call that a mini lift. Some people like, oh, I just want a neck lift, not a facelift. I just want this, not that. Like, it's really hard for me to guess what other people are calling things. What I will say is neck lift, it's all one thing. Like, you cannot just lift the neck and then leave the face and the jowls and, like, everything on the face just hanging there. You will look crazy. So if you're getting a neck lift, you're also getting a lower facelift, which historically we have called a facelift. Some people with the deep plane technique, like what I'm doing, what I do now, I am lifting, I'm lifting the mid face somewhat at the same time. And so I'm calling that, and that I'm actually like dissecting out the deep plane. I'm dissecting out the neck. I call that a deep plane facelift, but it's really a neck face and partial mid facelift. I think a brow lift is, in my mind, that's a separate surgery. A mid-face lift can be a separate surgery, or you can just do a lower face and neck lift as a separate surgery, or you could do that alone, I guess I would say. A lot of people need them all together. And so kind of getting back to the full face transformation is, it started out with facial feminization, kind of how I got busy. But what I really learned from facial feminization is about the balance in the face and how everything works together and how one thing offsets the next thing. And so in women, just for example, some people will come in and say, oh, like, I hate my jaw. I hate my jaw. It's too big. And the jaw really isn't that big. And you can look at tons of examples of supermodels like Angelina Jolie. And I don't know. I'm not really good with models. There's tons of them that have this super square, super defined jaw and yet look unquestionably feminine. Why? Some parts we don't totally understand, like why our brains, when we look at somebody, think male or female. But I'll just say, like, Angelina Jolie has super defined jaw, but big, full lips. She has a very refined nose. She has arched brows that sit above her orbital rim with big eyes without a heavy orbital rim, like a heavy orbital rim. So all those things matter together. So it's not the absolute size of anything that matters. It's how it all works together. And that's true in the facial feminization surgeries, but that's also true in all surgeries. And so I've kind of developed this nice niche of people come in because they look tired. And I'm like, well, yes, it's your eyelids, but it's also your brow. It's also that your cheeks have dropped. It's also some of the jaw, or, you know, it could be a bunch of different things that makes you look tired, not just your eyelids. Similarly, some people will say like, oh, I look angry. Well, it might be your brow bossing. It might be that the corners of your lips are downturned and a lip lift would help. It might, or what I call an extended lip lift. It might be a brow. It might be all those things together. So there's rarely just one thing that acts in isolation. And the same thing applies with facial rejuvenation. Like what I'm saying, I don't know if you're listening, you won't get this, but like I have a good example on myself. Like if you just pull up the skin of the neck, you're going to have this weird thing on your face. If you just pull, so okay, we're going to pull this and lower face. Well, now I've got this weird bunching on my cheek with all this extra skin. That looks crazy and doesn't really look refreshed. So oftentimes patients will need a neck, face, mid face, or extended face, and a brow lift to kind of lift everything back up where it was. And a lot of times, sometimes people are like, oh, it's not, I'm not that bad. It doesn't look that bad. And it doesn't mean you look bad. It just means like we have to balance everything. And sometimes more surgery is required to bring everything into the right balance and all make it match. Second thing I would say about that is a lot of times, and this is not, it's a huge shift in thinking, but a lot of times more surgery to balance things actually looks more natural. So a lot of times patients are like, oh, but I don't want to look, you know, I don't want to be the plastic surgery queen and look like all distorted and all pulled. A lot of times,
like they went through a wind tunnel.
Yeah, like a lot of times, well, that's just tiny. Shouldn't happen ever. But a lot of times to look the most natural, balancing a couple things or doing surgery on more than one part of the body is what's needed to look natural. So I all the time am like just continually amazed. I will do these surgeries that if you look at the before and after, it's like night and day. It's so different. But because they balance and everything is in harmony with each other, so maybe somebody came for their nose, but I'm like, you know, it's actually your chin. It's your chin is super small. It's receded. That's what's making your nose look big. Yeah, we can make your nose smaller and cuter, but you really, it's your chin. We need to do that. And then maybe it's also a little bit of the cheeks. We're going to do all three of those things together. You can make big changes in faces and it will still look natural if it's balanced. If everything works together, my best compliment is to do a huge surgery and then, well, not for facial feminization necessarily, but like I was saying, nose, cheeks, chin. And then the patient goes back to work 2 or 3 weeks later and people are like, did you get new makeup or is that new lipstick, or asking if they got their hair cut? To me, that is like the best compliment, because like I said, when you look at before and after, they're very different. Like you think, how can people not notice that? But when you just see the after, if everything is balanced and, you know, the face matches all the components, people cannot tell a lot of times that you had anything done. So that's really the kind of niche that I'm in, is like making everything in the face work together.
I love that. I want to talk a little bit about rhinoplasties. I feel like there's a very small group of surgeons that do it really, really, really well. I think there's a lot, big group of surgeons that do it, but it's almost the elite who can really do a good rhinoplasty where like somebody who has a trained eye can't tell.
Yeah.
To me, that's somebody who really knows what they're doing, when I can't tell if that person had a rhinoplasty, but if I can tell they look like they probably did. Those aren't the top tiers for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that all just goes back to like when I first started practice, people would come and say like, I just want natural. I just want subtle changes. Or actually, no, they'd say, I want subtle. And what I learned, people don't want subtle. They want a big difference. They want it to look different. That's what they're paying for. That's what they're coming to you for. They don't want subtle. They want natural. And so they want to not look pinched. They don't want to look, you know, like they have a nasal deformity. They want to look natural. So I think the keys to that is, one, again, balancing it with the rest of their face. Like, I have some patients who have, you know, these big, beautiful eyes and, you know, like nice brows and huge lips. Like, a tiny nose is going to look crazy on them. And so I try to do a lot of counseling before. Like, they'll show me, if they show me photos of these tiny noses, I lose patients because of it, but I just say no. Like, that's just not going to work on your face. Like, it's going to look weird. And like you said, it's easy to find someone who will do a tiny little pinch Barbie nose, but if it's just not going to look good, like, I usually try to steer them away, or I don't know, they may go somewhere else.
They'll find somebody who will do it.
So I think it's balancing with the rest of their face is really important, but also like taking into account their skin type, thick, thin, so that like they have a reasonable expectation, and then knowing how to work with different skin types. Houston is cool because we are a majority city, meaning like white people are the minority. It's other minorities that are actually the majority of the people in Houston. So like everyone is some shade of black or brown, which is cool. And it presents all kinds of challenges in noses because they're all different shapes, from kind of the traditionally Middle Eastern, like hook under rotated, to older thin skin, to the more like flat, wide. All of those are going to respond differently to different techniques. And so I think that's why it becomes, and I don't even pretend like I'm elite, I think I'm good. Rhinoplasty is hard. It's something like you're just always getting better. Like every single surgery I do, I like learn a little something more. And so there can't be a formula. And I think that's where people go wrong. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But like, I know a few surgeons, I do their revision. I've seen consistent people come in that want revisions. And the best thing, yes, is they just have the same formula for every person. Like, they cut the same, they do the same, it's the same, same. And then sometimes that works great, and sometimes that looks weird. And I think you have to know, like, okay, this is a thick skin, and their nose is kind of wide and flat. This is what's going to be appropriate, and I'm going to use ABC on them. Whereas this person, also thick skin, also brown, but totally different nose shape, I'm going to have to use XYZ techniques. So yeah, the reason there's two is because there's two people that just want to like put in the time, like put in the reps really, and like just do, I mean, you just have to do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And at even like in our field, some of the people that we consider like Dean Toriumi is probably like one of the best published, best spoken, he still, half of his talks are about mistakes he's made and like what he's doing differently and how you can avoid this, which is awesome that he shares that stuff openly, you know, with younger surgeons. But I'm like, I remember my first few years sitting at conferences and being like, oh my gosh, if he's still making mistakes, like, how am I ever gonna do this? And like, you learn and do a good job, but I think even the best,
it takes experience
learning, you know, because it's a hard surgery.
I've heard, you know, I always ask my surgeons, what's your favorite surgery to do? And A lot of the surgeons I have on are body contouring surgeons, and they'll say rhinoplasty. And I'm like, y'all always say that, but your practice is like mommy makeovers. And then they'll say, I just didn't do enough of them. I didn't see that population come through my office, and the mommy makeovers did come a lot more, and I did build my practice through that. So I feel like out of training, a lot of surgeons want to go into face and rhinoplasty. The patient population they end up with is more for body.
There's definitely more body patients, but I do think that's the difference. And I'll just put in a shameless plug here. I think that's the difference with facial plastic surgeons, is that we all did ear, nose, and throat training. And so we did 5 years of ear, nose, and throat. And so probably a quarter of our training is facial plastics. Like we have facial plastic people on in fellowship. So we're learning rhinoplasty all through that. We also have rhinologists who are like sinus surgeons. So they're doing septoplasty, functional noses, sinus, how the nose works, learning about the valves and breathing. And then if you opt to go on and do additional training in facial plastics, you get tons more rhinoplasty cases. And so we've done hundreds, usually. Like, I don't remember exactly what my numbers were, but I had done at least like 50 on my own, somebody supervising, but I did the whole surgery in addition to like 100 that I assisted on. Whereas I think plastic surgeons, so they have to do general surgery, which is like butts and guts and cardiac and whatever. And then they do 2, now 3 years of plastic surgery, but they've got to do body, hand, burn, microvascular, all the cosmetic stuff, and face. Like, that's a lot to learn. And so, like, you're the numbers, I think, especially with newer grads, I mean, they just don't have the volume. And so it's interesting, but I know just like a lot of my friends started out like, okay, I'm going to try everything. And then quickly, like, noses were like the first thing that fell off, because you got to do at least 100 to even kind of know what you're doing. Well, and I think it's one of those things, like, the more you know, the more you realize what you don't know. To just do something that's okay is not hard, but to be really, really good, it takes like years of evolution and study and practice.
You know, I think it's funny that you brought up about how some surgeons have, like, they do the same rhinoplasty for everybody.
Not accusing, I just
suspect. Okay.
Based on results that I have seen consistently.
What I see, and the reason why I went back to it, is because I had a consultation with somebody who reached out to me. He was looking for a rhinoplasty surgeon. And for her, the most important thing she was looking for was like this really tiny Barbie nose that she had seen on an Instagram page of a surgeon in Turkey. And she sent me the link, and I'm like, okay, well, you're not going to find this type, this style here in the U.S. It's more of...
You can. I'll send it to you. Not me. I have a friend in Dallas who went and studied with the guys in Turkey. I think in the United States, we have decided that that doesn't look natural and our patients don't want that. The guys in Turkey have decided, yes, there are plenty of patients that want that. And now there's a lot of people flying from the U.S. to Turkey because they do want that aesthetic. And there's some really good Turkish surgeons. They're doing great jobs. It's an aesthetic that has not traditionally been American, but it's coming. I'll send you a name.
Send me the info.
And it's
for her.
Trying to do that style of surgery, that aesthetic, which... it's not really my aesthetic, but it doesn't matter. It's not me that wears the nose, right? And so he's realizing, like, yeah, they're smart. They figured something out. There are patients who want this and trying to bring it to the U.S.
You know, it reminds me kind of the liposuction from Colombia, the body contouring liposuction techniques that they have in Colombia, that it looks different. Like, it just looks completely different than a lot of the liposuction body contouring done here in the U.S. There's a big group of plastic surgeons that went to Colombia or are going to Colombia to train on how to do that specific type of liposuction. And it's the best of both worlds for patients who are here in the U.S. who don't want to travel to Colombia to get that surgery, but they want that aesthetic. So they're able to find the surgeons who are delivering that, or, you know, giving those results without having to go all the way to Colombia. I'm hopeful that we can find some of those turkey noses here, because for my patient, or for my girl, she was like, I don't want to go to Turkey. She's like, but I want this type of nose.
It's possible. I think what's also hard for just obviously from my standpoint is I think I do a very good job of giving patients what they want just in general. And then sometimes, so then I'll post those pictures, and then sometimes that actually works against you. Like I do a lot of lip lifts. I love lip lifts. I think that's actually how we got connected.
Yeah, if you didn't, my friend Dana.
Yeah, IG Dana. Some patients want it pulled up in the middle. Like, they want it to look a little A-shaped. They love, like, some patients really request that, and I can do that. And then other patients will come and be like, but I've seen some of your work and I do not want that. And I'm like, okay, then we won't do that. Like, in some cases, I think there are surgeons who maybe can do something or offer something, but it's really just patient dependent. In other cases, I think people benefit from going and doing training somewhere else.
And bringing that art.
Yeah. So it's the same with noses. I mean, I like it. I do morphing. I don't really like doing it because it's just kind of made up and the graphics look weird. And it, I don't know. I don't have a great morphing system. What I really love is when patients will look at my website and say, I really like this one. She kind of looks like me. I like this one, this one. I don't like this one. And sometimes it's like, it's the same thing with noses. Like some people want a huge scoop. Like they want it to be a dip. And then other people want it straight. Other people want it just a little dip. I'm giving them what they want. But I've had patients that are like, you know, oh, this one is way too much. This one is overdone. And I'm like, I mean, sometimes I agree, but that's what she wanted. She loves it. And I delivered, you know, what she wants. Seeing people before and afters is, I think, like the most important thing in deciding a surgeon, above what they can morph, above what they market and advertise. But I also think it's important to like look at those critically and then actually have a discussion. Like, I don't like this one. I do like this one. I like this one. This person looks like me. Do you think that's possible for me? Because for me, that's like the best real, the closest to real life we can get in a consultation. Like you could morph and make someone look anything in a morph. That doesn't mean necessarily that's what they're going to get delivered. Like I like it if patients just really can't imagine what I'm talking about, nose and chin. A lot of times they're like, just recently someone came to me like, oh, it's my nose. And I'm like, it is your nose, but it's your chin. And then, you know, and I kept saying it. And I mean, she was listening, but she, like, we had to go to the computer and morph for me to like really show what a difference the chin makes for her to like, you know, I think visual people like to see it, but it's not me promising this is 100% what you're going to look like a better way to guess or estimate a result is actually to find someone on their before and after side that looks like you, similar shape, similar skin type, and then ask like, do you think this is possible for me? I really like this result.
I love that. How often are you getting wish picks coming in with facial tuning, face tune on them?
Lately, it's been a little bit better, but God, I went through a phase where it was maddening. Like Instagram, that some of these social media platforms are trying to, it's hard to grow on Instagram now as a plastic surgeon because they're trying to kind of stifle it because they think that's, you know, affecting young kids, which I hope, I mean, I don't know.
It's the face tuning.
I don't know if it is or not, but I'm like, my real accurate before and after in the same studio with the same lighting in the same position is a real example of what's possible. People are manipulating lighting. They're manipulating photos. Doctors are doing that, which is causing distortions in people's perceptions. And then Facetune, the filters and the Facetune are, the filters is like the worst thing to happen because now a lot of them are so good people don't realize. And so people will come in with these wish photos, especially of jaw and chin stuff, of jaw and chin. And they're like, oh, I want this. And I don't want to sound snarky, but I'm like, you can have it. You just have to take the photo from above and then put on a filter. And like, you'll have a little diamond, you know, heart-shaped face. Same as this other person who has a filter. That's what's, I think, distorting people's sense of reality is, one, it's hard to have very consistent photos, but I sometimes see stuff. I'm good surgeons, too. I don't, like, they're just obviously not accurate before and afters. They're obviously from a different angle. They're obviously with different lighting. I mean, that is creating an unrealistic expectation for people. And then filters, when people self-post photos, I mean, if we were going to outlaw anything, I would outlaw filters.
You know, I totally agree. And I remember hearing conversations in the office when surgeons really started to post more on IG years ago, like 7, 8, 9 years ago, when there started to be more of a movement towards IG, towards Instagram. And I remember like hearing in conversations like, that's not fair because that's in a different lighting and that's not really showing accurate results. And just hearing like an uproar from other plastic surgeons who were like, what the heck? Like, that's not fair. That would not cut it at a medical review. That wouldn't cut it at a conference. Like,
yeah, no,
they would laugh at me if I try to take this and show it at a conference as a before and after. Like, what is this? And I remember all of that.
Yeah, I actually did a little series on Instagram about like trick photography and ways photos can be manipulated. And sometimes I think we post photos of patients sometimes out and about, but I call them like living their best life, and it will show their before and not showing it as a before and after. It's a lot of times it's for transgender surgery, just to show people like out being happy, looking good, out with their friends, or, you know, at a family event or something. And we just call those like living her best life or living his best life. Some people are taking the same filtered photos and straight up before and after from different angles, different light, and an obvious filter. Like, that's just dishonest. It's sort of not fair because, well, I would say it's not fair. Partially because, yeah, they're going to get the consult, they're going to get these patients to book, maybe they're going to be busier. But it's more fair to me because my patients know what they're signing up for. They know what, you know, they have realistic expectations, they've seen real people. And so, like, I sleep at night not worrying that, like, I misled somebody, or is she going to be mad that I delivered, like, an actual result instead of a Instagram filter result, you know? Like, I don't know what happened, but I just wonder, I'm like, how many of these patients end up mad? And then you're dealing with mad patients because they didn't get what you showed on Instagram, and that's not what I want to do with my
life. You know, I think that's what makes the difference, in my opinion, for my, when I'm helping my girls find their surgeons. It's so much more than the before and after pictures that you're finding on their Instagram. It's about how is the process from meeting the surgeon? Are you even getting to meet them? You'd be surprised how many patients are not even getting to meet their surgeon until the morning of surgery, showing up. Hey, I'm here. Mark me up.
Yeah.
Hi. For the first time.
Well, and that's even crazier because then you're just totally relying on whatever content they're feeding you, which we all do it. Like, somebody has a complication, I'm not like, here, let me show you this on Instagram. You know, like, we try to deal with it. We try to resolve it. You know, I try to see them through the process, but I'm not like publicizing it, right? Like, we're all publicizing our good results. So if you don't even meet the surgeon or don't have a chance to talk to them, then you're just making a choice based on information they are choosing to disclose to the public, which you have no idea. Is that partial truth, most truth, little truth? So, like,
you know, I feel like you can tell a lot about a surgeon by their initial consultation. How do you feel during that consultation? Are they being honest with you and telling you, hey, maybe this picture that you're showing me has a filter on it, and let's adjust your expectations and talk about what can really be done for you with your bone structure and what your wants are, versus, yeah, we can do it. Sure. I can home run.
Revisions will always be big business. That's a lot of what I do.
Oh my gosh. How many times have I heard from my girls that the revision costs more than the original surgery? Yes, it does.
Yeah, it costs a lot more. Yeah, it is hard to do revision surgery. Like, you don't know what you're going to find. You don't know what you're working with. You don't know how scarred it is. It's not, the tissue's not predictable in the same ways. I mean, I'm working like triple time to shift and change and undo things. I just say it's hard in the nose. It's hard everywhere. It's hard in the nose. It's hard. It's a little more, it's risky in the brows. It's really hard in the jaw and chin, depending on like what they've had done so far. Revisions are just hard. So yeah, it does matter where you go first.
Getting it right the first time. My girls know I'm a huge advocate for getting it right the first time. Waiting, being patient, doing your research, picking your plastic surgeon like you're picking your husband, because you're trusting that they're going to do right by you, do the best that they can, and stand by you after surgery during the whole time that you're in recovery, which is very, very important. Before I let you go, I would love to hear about the fat grafting to the lips and the process. What does that process normally look like?
Okay, fat grafting to the lips. So wide disclaimer, I would not offer this surgery independently. So fat grafting works best in areas of the face that have fat. Our lips do not naturally have a lot of fat in them. It's muscle, it's salivary glands, it's mucosa. There's not a lot of natural fat. So not a lot stays in the lips. Generally, if I'm doing it in the lips, I tell people, if they're getting fat grafting to the cheeks, temples, you know, like marionette lines, whatever else, and they also want to add it to the lips, I do that. It doesn't stay as well as it does in the other places. So it's not the magic solution we've all been looking for. I wanted to, because I burn filler like it's not even worth injecting most of the time for the magic solution too. So it's not like this magic great thing. The microfat, I think, helps me to feel comfortable filling them as much as possible, even overfilling. Well, I kind of overfill everything a little bit, knowing we're probably going to lose 30, 40, 50% of it, depending on their age. So the lips, what I tell people is like, I wouldn't put you to sleep just to do this, but you're getting fat grafting in your cheeks. Let's try to put some in your lips. And my logic is, even if I put whatever, I mean, you can put a lot. You can put 6 to 8 cc's between the two lips, sometimes even more depending on their face shape and all that. Even if 1 cc of that stays, that's one syringe of filler that you don't have to get for the rest of your life. So
I'd be happy with that.
It's worth trying. People rarely just need fat grafting to the lips. So usually it's like, okay, we're going to put a little in the cheeks. We're going to put a little here, or we're going to do a little nano fat in the skin. I'm like, well, while we're there, we've harvested some. Let's try putting some in the lips. But I try to kind of undersell it and hope that
it over-delivers.
I will say, though, something I've been doing that I love, in addition, well, I love a lip lift on almost anyone who's a candidate, which is not everyone. I love a lip lift. That is the best lip augmentation surgery, period. Fat grafting is okay. The other thing that I've been doing a lot lately is putting a fascia graft in the lip. So if I do a facelift, I take a strip of the SMAS, or when I'm doing a hairline advancement, I take a strip of the underlying tissue under the skin called the SMAS. I'll cut a little strip and I actually pass it from one side of the lip to the other to give volume. I do the same thing in the bottom lip also. It's a tiny 2 millimeter scar on the inside in the mucosa of the lip. That tissue is a little bit firmer. It just stays a little bit better. Sometimes I'll do some fat grafting on top of it, but that has been the thing for my patients who are thin, thin, thin lip to actually like create a lip that's worked really nicely.
Beautiful. I love that. Whenever I'm ready for my face, since you won't do it independently, whenever I'm ready for my face, I already know, you know what I want for my lips.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it. I'm playing around with it, you know, trying to find like what's the optimal fat to fascia, how thick can we make the graft without it feeling stiff. So far, I think I can probably push the limits a little bit more, but I don't want people to end up with stiff, weird feeling lips. So yeah, that's something that I've been doing, but I've been doing more of lately.
I love it. Well, Dr. Rodman, I don't want to keep you for too much longer. Usually we keep these episodes to about 30 minutes, but yeah, the conversation has been so interesting today that we went just a little bit over. So if my girls want to come see you, how can they find you?
We are on all the social media platforms. Instagram is probably has the most information, and that's at Dr. Rodman, DR.RODMAN. Or my website also has tons of photos and information, and it links to a lot of YouTube videos. And that is drregenarodman.com or faceforwardhouston.com.
Awesome. And that is our episode for today, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to Dr. Regina Rodman. And as we talked about full face transformations, I will see you guys next week.
So if you're listening to this episode and you're listening to the Big Butts No Lies podcast, you might be on your surgery journey. And if you are, and you don't know what to do, you don't know where to start, you've come to the right place. I am so excited to do one-on-ones with you guys. I've realized as I do them more and more just how valuable they are to you, not only because you get my expert opinion, I get to guide you towards plastic surgeons that we know are going to do a good job and keep you safe. Besides all that, I get to talk to you about things that might not even be on your radar, things that you don't even know are possible. But since we get so in depth with our conversations and I really get to know what your dreams are and what you're really looking for with your body, I can tailor my recommendations to the surgeons that I know can help you achieve that. And taking the guesswork out of who to go to is invaluable. So schedule your one-on-one phone call with me. You can go to my website, go to the quick links, submit your information. Let me get to know you. Let me see how can we help you. You can get your own team. You guys, I have been working so hard behind the scenes to come up with a perfect way for you to have your plastic surgery and not only come out with beautiful incisions, but also feeling beautiful on the inside. So book your call with me and take the guesswork out of your plastic surgery journey.
And don't forget, new episodes every Monday. I'll see you then.